Hey everybody, I'm AJ, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, AJ.
Never introduced a speaker before. Pretty fitting it's this guy. I met Lance back in 2010. We went through treatment together, followed by a three-quarter house and got very close. We're roommates and all that. I had a little slip up and he's still sober. And when I came back in the program, it was like nothing had changed. You know, got close again, started going to meetings and stuff together, and it was instrumental in my recovery to have his support. It's harder to, you know, get in touch with people you haven't seen in so long. So, you know, having it seem as if nothing had changed really helped me out when coming back in this time around. And he's a perfect example of how to do the program, hold you accountable and all that good stuff. And I'm looking forward to hearing what he has to share. That'll give you Lance.
Thing about setting expectations that don't want to do that. I'm Lance, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Lance.
And sobriety date is April the 7th of 2010, and I appreciate being able to be here and participate with you. My sponsor and an email, the reason I don't typically wear suits, there's dust on my shoes. but thanks to AA, this is what we do. I remember, and I just said a minute ago, but my old sponsor told me, he said, you're going to wear a black suit. So you're going to wear a black suit behind a podium, or you're going to wear a black suit under. And he said, above's preferable. So that's that. I drank. I had my first, my first experience with alcohol and alcoholism and all that good stuff. I actually have a family member who's had some run-ins with Alcoholics Anonymous, and I remember one of my first memories when I was growing up was looking outside. And I still to this day can remember just about perfectly, but it was late one night, and we had like a very like close-knit type family, right? And I remember like hearing some arguing going on downstairs, which wasn't typical for us. Everything typically flowed pretty well, but I heard a lot of arguing going on downstairs and the doors slamming, shutting and all this stuff. And I'm like 8 or 9 years old at the time. And I knew my brother it was something to do with my brother. It had to have been. I hear the front door slam shut 3 times. My brother's taken off in the front yard. My mom's behind him and my dad's just walking out on the front porch. And I remember watching the altercation, nothing physically like, but they were like face to face, which my dad's like a big dude and you don't get face to face with my pops. He's like a former boxer and all this stuff. And so my brother's like face to face with him. My mom's standing there, she's trying to referee some. And it's like a scene out of a movie. A car pulls up and my brother gets in the car, takes off, and slowly my parents walk back inside. And for the next 2 weeks, we didn't talk about that. There was nothing said. I wasn't sure exactly what happened. I knew it had to do with alcohol or drugs or something along those lines. That's about the way that it went for the year or so prior to that. And he ended up coming back, and I remember the way that it split our family apart for those 2 weeks, like nobody talked. It's like deathly silent, right? And for those 2 weeks, it was very, very, very rough. And I remember making the declaration, I will not drink or anything else from that point. I'm not going to do it. I saw what was happening to my family. It's just, I can't be that guy. I'm not going to be my brother. I'm not going to tear apart a family like that. Obviously, I'm here sitting in an Al-Anon meeting, so it is what it is. I truly believed that at the time, though. We'll say that. I really did. I honestly believed that I wasn't going to drink, I wasn't going to do any drugs or anything like that, or even tobacco, I think. So, fast forward a few years, and I'm sitting, I've been invited over with like the cool kids in my grade or whatever. And so we're all hanging out downstairs in the basement, and I'm not a cool kid, right? One is not like the others. They're all like popular, got girlfriends and everything else, and I'm there. And they invited me. I felt like even at that time that maybe I invited myself and just showed up. Like I always felt very disconnected on some level. And so I'm down there and I got to impress these guys because these are the cool kids, right? And so if I can become popular and cool, life is good, right? Life is going to be great. So we're hanging out down there. And one of the guys, Adam says, hey, my brother's got some vodka upstairs. Y'all want a drink? And so, you know, everybody else said yes. One was not. So my thought of seeing what had happened with my brother for some reason escaped me at that moment. And the only thing I could think about was the fact that one was not like the others, right? That like that finally got invited with all the cool kids. I have arrived, and I'm not going to let go of this. So, yeah, let's drink. Let's do it, right? Adam goes up there and gets the two water bottles of some type of terrible vodka. He brings both of them back downstairs, and we're hanging out. We're kind of like in a circle, which kind of like an AA meeting. We're like on the couches and everything, and so one of the guys takes a swig, and he's got some orange juice, and evidently you're supposed to chase it with the orange juice. So I took note of that, and it comes around to me, the two water bottles, and I'm like 14 or 15 years old at the time. And so it comes to me, and they hand me the water bottle of vodka, and I take a swig of the vodka, and it's freaking terrible. It goes around. I take more orange juice. It goes around, and you hear about it all the time in meetings. All of a sudden, boom, something happened. I was like fitting in with everybody. About the third or fourth turn, it was about turn three on the second or third cycle there, I guess. When it came back around to me, all of a sudden I'm fitting in great. We have a good time that night, and the next morning I wake up feeling great still. There's no issues. I really did feel like for the first time I actually had friends, right? Like that's something that distance that I always felt like they accidentally invited me or I invited myself. I knew they wanted to hang out again very soon. That was removed from me, and I wanted to. I remember wanting to drink again and couldn't wait until next weekend. So next weekend came and we drank again and everything was fine. And that was the story for several years. Throughout high school, I didn't really have any issues with it. I mean, I had some social ramifications of being drunk and doing stupid things. I was talking to this girl who was in Destin and I was in Roswell and I was drunk. And she told me she wished that I was down there. Just a passing comment on the phone, a drunk call. So I said, oh, okay, cool. So it's like 1 o'clock in the morning. So I go ahead and grab my keys and walk out. And my buddy's like, whoa, like, where are you going? And so I'm at Adam's there again, same guy. Adam's there. And Adam literally stood in front of my truck door and said, you're not driving anywhere, especially not Destin. You're an idiot. So I picked him up and moved him and got into my car and proceeded to drive. I don't know where. GPS phone, our phones were, you know, the old school ones. And so I don't know how to get to Destin, but I was going to figure that out on the way. So I get about 15 miles away, and she calls me up. They've contacted her. And her friends. And so I get a call from her and she's like, Lance, if you show up down here, I'm not talking to you ever, right? So that puts a damper on that. And I didn't have any money either for gas, so I don't know what I would have done. I mean, I was always broke. So I ended up going back to my buddy's place and I go back inside and they're all just like, what the heck? What's wrong with you, man? Like, what are you doing? Who does that? You, dude, that's crazy, right? And so I ended up not going down there that night. I ended up in Destin other nights, but not like that. Those are planned trips. I was able to always make it look like everything was good too. I always remember that. I was able to back parents off, not only my parents, but other parents. I was able to back friends off. I was able to disguise the true me all the time. On the inside, by the end of my high school career, I was starting to get some social ramifications of things I was doing when I was drunk. People stopped trusting me. Word got around that I'm a freaking idiot when I'm drunk. And people stopped inviting me over. And so I immediately got pissed at them. And it is what it is. You know, started to create some of those harms and some of the stuff that we appear later on a list. And so I knew that the answer was college. And as soon as I got away and got a new group of friends, everything was going to be fine. So I transferred down to, well, I started college at Valdosta State University, and I spent about a year and a half down there. I remember trying to, there's a little town called Remerton. They had this bar that had on, is advertised every Wednesday night. It's called Sink or Swim Nights, $10. Freaking amazing. I sank a lot instead of swam. And it's $10. You drink all you want. Not very good quality stuff, but still, it didn't matter to me. I was chasing that same drunk that I had the first time, man. Whenever things got rocky, whenever I felt disconnected with people, which I did when I wasn't drinking, I knew what would take that away. All I gotta do is just wait until tonight whenever there's a party going on. I gotta wait until later on Thursday when everybody else is drinking along with me and we can have a good time. I'm gonna be connected. I'm going to have all those feelings kind of go away because we're partying, we're having a good time. And I went through a whole bunch of money. I had a business in high school that I made a decent amount of money with, and that was gone within like 3 months of being about Valdosta. Gone. Even on $10 sink or swim night, you can rack it up pretty quickly. And I remember talking to my parents and telling them, hey, I'm broke. I've got to have some money for school or gas and stuff like that. And like, what happened to all that money? I told them one time I bought stock with it and didn't want to. It's just, I come up with crazy ideas to disguise the real, my bank account's in red, right? And it's just insanity. So I'm down there and I start to get, the same stuff that happened in high school followed me to Valdosta State. I couldn't believe that a lot of those guys down there are about the same friends as I had in Roswell. And so I got disconnected again, unless I was drinking. So I knew, I had tried to stop a couple of times down there. I remember I was at like, something awful had happened one night. I honestly don't know what the heck it was. But the next day, like I'm like waking up, I was like, oh, I can't do this again. We're done, right? And so no drinking ever again. And I remember I went to some Bible study guy or something, and he get it out of you. And so I went up and like took a chain, which I still have on my keychain actually, but I continued to drink. I mean, stuff like that. I was on the inside wanted something to change a long time ago. I remember there's one day in particular down there that one of my best friends was also one of us. Shocking, we find each other. One of my best friends growing up was also one of us, and he had gone to rehab when I was like 18, right? And I was, at the time, only about 6 months. This is like 6 months after he went to rehab. But while he was at rehab, they gave him a day pass, and Justin went over and hung out with me, and we went to a gas station, and I'm driving down the road with Justin. I'm like, dude, buy your time until you get out of here. Once you get out of Mar, you'll be all set to go, right? So you drink just like me. You're not an alcoholic. You can go back to all this stuff once you get out. It's going to be cool, no problem, don't worry about it. We talked about it before. I was like, yeah, you know, I really think it's just the pills. I got to stop doing the pills. I've got to. And I was like, yeah, man, just stop doing the pills. Just drink, right? So he finishes up at Mar. And there's one day, is January the 6th, I get like six phone calls, or seven, I don't know. I get a lot of phone calls from my parents, which is just odd in a single day. And I don't answer any of them. And then my brothers called me, and that's actually what started standing out to me, because both my brothers called me like two or three times, and I didn't answer those either. I had started drinking that day, and so I got a text from my mom. She said, you need to call me back ASAP. So I picked up the phone, I called her back, I said, what's going on? Why so many calls? And she said, Lance, I just want you to know so you don't freak out whenever you see me, but I am about 10 minutes out of Valdosta right now. I said, Justin drank and choked on his vomit last night, and he died. And that was like that was my best bug growing up, right? So my first thought was right back to that conversation, like that. Like instantaneous, that I was the guy that told him, said, dude, you can drink like that. It's cool, man. No problem, right? And I remember that was just a freaking terrible, terrible time period. I got back from his funeral service, and his mom asked me to deliver his eulogy there too. And the guilt and the shame from the inside that was just boiling up over that one comment that I had no idea how to work with. I had no outlet. I told nobody that, period. You don't tell people that. So, or at least not outside of these rooms. And so, like, that's what my thought was, right? You know, like I said, when there's an issue, like I learned early on, you just don't talk about it. You just go through it and you get out the other end. So I come back to Valdosta and it's a freaking show. The harms list goes up. I drink like crazy, so I've got to stop drinking. Here's the insanity part. So I'm going to stop drinking. So I'm going to, you know, really what I need to do is change my environment, because I've failed so many times stopping drinking. I told myself I was going to stop many times about Valdosta, but I end up back at Sink or Swim night. And so I'm going to change schools. I got to get it around some other people. So when I change schools, I'm going to sober up and we're going to do this thing right. So I transferred to University of Georgia in Athens, and not the best treatment plan, by the way. So I get up there in Athens, and like the first, let's see where. All right. So the first month, I don't drink a drop of alcohol. I also don't really do much of anything else at all. I went to class. I went to class every day, I think. And I was living there, and I was on campus, and I was at UGA, my dream school. But on the inside, I was freaking miserable. I mean, I was not sociable. I wasn't hanging out with anybody. And so I run into a buddy of mine on campus one day, and he says, "Hey man, let's go downtown tonight, right?" Boom. Go downtown with him, and I wake up the next morning like that. And so I had like 50 days of non-drinking, not sober. I had 50 days of not drinking during that time period. And I went back out, and it's just boom. Same freaking thing, right? The time machine. I drank two and wake up the next morning. And like that was really like, that's exactly how that happened that night. And I was like, damn, man, I mean, like, why does this stuff keep happening? My brother had sobered up at the time, and he was dropping little hints of like, hey, you might want to. So I'm up there and I'm calling people that I shouldn't be calling when I'm hammered, and stuff's happening. Money's gone again. So I said, all right, well, I really need to stop drinking now. And so, I'd been to a few AA meetings at that point in time, and I sat in the back of the room. I didn't meet anybody, but I felt like I was kind of starting to do AA, right? I knew that wasn't going to work, because I tried that a few times. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, all right, so what if I do something like I'll coach football? So I coached for a season. That worked for about 60 days or so. I had sober, and I went back out again. I figured you can't coach kids and drink alcohol. You're not supposed to do that. It's against the rules. And so, but that didn't help either. I was looking for a whole bunch of other sources and other things to help me control my drinking, at least control it, at best, hopefully stop my drinking. During this time, I joined a fraternity. Also not a good treatment plan. Of which a third of my pledge class has now gone through the same treatment facility I've been through, and which is always interesting to see another fraternity brother in there. But I roll through that stuff. I'm just thinking about all the friends. There's a whole bunch of stuff that happened in there, man. I mean, you know, one of the guys I was living with, his grandfather gave him a handle of Jim Beam. That was like a special handle to him because it was for his 21st birthday, and he didn't open it that night. And his grandfather passed away like 3 or 4 days later. And I drank it one night. I mean, I was out, and I didn't mean to do that. I knew the significance behind it. I remember looking at it thinking I shouldn't drink it, but I'll just replace it tomorrow. Of course, I didn't replace it tomorrow because I didn't have the money to replace it with, which is the exact reason why I went there in the first place. My mind's crazy. And he obviously was furious about that. I was collecting money from my roommates at the time to pay my utility bills, right, like you're supposed to. For some reason, it was in my name. I don't understand why that was happening, but power and water, both in my name. They moved out after the power went out. They also moved out after the water went off. But I had prepared well for it, because I'm a guy that, even though it's a disaster on the inside, it's a disaster on the outside, I'm prepared for stuff like this. I literally filled up water bottles, knowing that the disconnect time was coming like 2 or 3 days later. I filled up water bottles so that I could shave and keep the image up. like everything's fine. It's insanity. I mean, that's crazy talk. Who does stuff like that? But I had to make it look like everything was okay. Moved into the fraternity house, told everybody we moved out of the old house because of crime. I mean, it's just like my life is spiraling. It's like every moment everybody's about to find out, right? And I'm terrified of that. And so we're going through, you know, the relationships that I harmed, the friendships that I harmed. I mean, it's just the list is getting long, right? And I'm getting very, very, very tired of living. And I'm getting very, very, very tired of drinking. And because it's not doing, I still think back to that first night whenever I was freaking connected with everybody. And for some reason now it's having the opposite effect. And the things that I'm doing, I'm waking up with the guilt, shame, remorse. I'm getting further disconnected from everybody again. And it's just not, I'm freaking clueless, right? I'm failing out of school. I don't have any money. I've got, my bank accounts are in red. Nobody trusts me anymore. It's a very lonely spot. But I got to shave with water bottles. I mean, it's like you got, I had to keep everything up. So I remember there was one day in particular, like I'm at my fraternity house and one of the little brothers in my fraternity comes upstairs and he said, "Hey man, we got girls coming over tonight. Can you go get us alcohol?" And so I said, "Sure, why not? Let's go get some alcohol. I can't drink tonight though because I've got a final tomorrow and I hadn't been to the class yet. So I need to study a lot." And I had a fraternity brother named Blake Kilday, and Blake was a lacrosse player at UGA. So he used to drink wine when he studied at night. And so I would drink it. I was like, I'm going to try that tonight. I need all the help I can get. It's a real estate fourth. I'm not even a real estate major. For some reason, I'm enrolled in the class. And so I grab a six-pack. Then that's all I'm going to drink tonight. We're just going to drink a nice, easy night. So I go and we pick up the two handles for them, and I bring a six-pack back, and which never stays at six, but... it's one of those things, man. It was like the fastest, like, I think I only drank like one or two beers and blacked out. And that's not normal for me. I mean, I can drink a lot. I can drink with it. Don't judge me on that. but like I drank like one or two beers and then literally woke up the next day. It was like, boom. And I wake up and I collect, sunny, right? Not good. My final was in the morning. I picked the morning class. I used to pick morning classes thinking that I would not drink the night before because of the morning class. That didn't work either. So I wake up like an hour and a half into the final, right? The professor is up there. I can picture him being up in the front of the auditorium. It's UGA, so they got a huge, like 200 students in class. So I sent him an email real quick from my phone letting him know that I went to the hospital and would be late for my final. When can I make it up? Praying that he's going to tell me, come in tomorrow. Coming the next day, whenever. And he did something that probably saved my life right there without having any idea. He sent me a message back and he said, "No problem, just bring in a timestamp note of when you arrived at the hospital." At the time, that was like the last straw. I remember waking up and like the ramifications of what happened the night before. I'm looking at the text messages on my phone. My fraternity is done. It's over. I was brother of the year literally 6 months prior to that, and now I'm reading the messages. He's got to go. This is it, and it's a wide open email serve, right? And everybody, they know I'm seeing it, so they got no problem. That's how ready they were for me to go, and those were like the last guys that I had, right? And like the last people who were like in my corner still. So I knew what I had to do. I couldn't stay stop drinking, so we're not going to do that because that's freaking miserable. So it's time to go and call it a day. The fight's over. It's done. I'm the type of guy that the last few months of my drinking, I would literally walk into a bank or a Burger King and hope there somebody was about to hold up the place so I could walk in front of a bullet. And I literally, the thoughts would go through my head and look around, and there'd be so many nice people in there that nobody was going to do it. And I would stand there and feel like miserable, right? When I was not drinking. And so it's that morning, I'm just like, it's over. It's done. I've got it. It's done. I'm so freaking tired of this stuff. You know, Something else happened on that too. The 2 days prior to that, I got a message from a football player, a kid that I coached, and it's very important to me. It's not gonna be anything, y'all. But it's very important to me because he sent me a Facebook message randomly. And this is a good kid too. He sent me a message it's 2 days prior to all this stuff that my life collapsing in on me. And he sent me a message. He said, "Lance, I don't know why, but I feel like I've been called to pray for you today." And I messaged him back on Facebook, and I was like, "Thanks, man. Everybody always needs prayer. Trying to act like everything's fine still." This kid's like 14 years old. Who sends a message like that, right? But I remember I leave my fraternity house, and I'm gonna go kill myself. I said goodbye to my dog Chipper, and like Jones. And so I'm driving down the road. I find me a nice highway overpass that one day there will be hopefully a cross. Hopefully somebody shows up across there next to the highway overpass. Because I wanted it to look like it was an accident. I couldn't have other people think that I was committing suicide. Again, my ego is insane. So I find the overpass, and I'm driving, and I literally, I go to turn around to come back, right? And for the first time in a very, very long time, the thought of that message came through to me right then. And I thought about how he was going to be, his name was Joseph, how Joseph was going to be at my funeral. And it was like, well, maybe, I don't know. It wrestled with me. And so I'm driving down the road, and I'm thinking about the other players. And I started thinking about my family, my mom and dad. And I thought about, you know, families rarely, like, go through and be okay with a suicide with their kids, right? And so it's, you know, all right, well, this one, we're going to stop at a health clinic there at UGA because they got one. It's 24/7. So I'm going to stop in there, and I'm going to talk to a counselor. And, you know, because if you kill yourself, you can't go back. So if I go and talk to them, we'll be good, and I can still look at myself, or I can maybe get some actual freaking help, right? Because I knew, I mean, it was no, I knew at that point in time this was crazy, and I was just done. I talked to a counselor at Ridgeview, and a few days later I was, or not Ridgeview, but at UGA, and a few days later I was in Ridgeview. The few days in between that, I umpire baseball, and I was obviously desperate for money. My mind had flipped back to the fact that I didn't want to kill myself, and maybe I'm not an alcoholic, because that's how my mind works, man. I mean, you talk about the moment when I wake up, and for a few hours, I'm convinced I'm an alcoholic. It is what it is. I'm an alcoholic, and I need help. You give me about 24 hours, I'm convinced I'm not an alcoholic and that everything is over-exaggerated and I need some other type of help. I've been doing that for years. That's the insanity of alcoholism. It's like the same crap that you just did last night will probably happen again tonight, but let's drink anyways. Let's just see, right? So it is what it is. Gone. anyways. So we, that weekend, like I said, I umpire baseball, right? I'm going to go off on a tangent probably sometimes, but I umpire baseball, and I called up my supervisor who knew I was an alcoholic. I ended up making amends to him for financial stuff and a lot of other things. We hated each other, but he didn't have many umpires, so he had to have me. And so I go out there, and I said, man, I have to have money. I said, I'm going away for a while. I've got to make some money this weekend. I have to. Absolutely have to. And he was there for me. He threw me on some games I shouldn't have been on. I umpired 6 games that weekend. He knew where I was going, by the way. It's like not like it was a secret. And so he threw me on 6 games. In those 6 games umpiring baseball, I threw out 7 players and coaches. 7 of them. And the first year of my sobriety, I umpired baseball over the summer as well, and I worked well over 100 games. Well over 100 games. And I threw out maybe 4 or 5. I was somewhat restless, irritable, and discontent that first weekend. But so anyways, I end up in Ridgeview after I like detox on the freaking baseball field, right? And thankfully the coaches and parents didn't know that. And I'm behind, it's just, I can imagine how bad of a job I did. Anyway, so it's like, I end up in Ridgeview. I walk. I walk into Ridgeview and I walk into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I immediately figure out that all of y'all have got a serious problem, and I am not one of you. It just ain't happening. I walked into Ridgeview and there's a guy named Jeter who's still sober today. Jeter's getting kicked out of a meeting in there, and he's got like this color-coded red hat with red shirt and red shoes. I immediately judged him. I was like, who is this guy, right? He's like a clown, right? And so some of y'all know, and I love Jeter. So he's getting thrown out of a meeting, and my mom's standing right there, and she literally, it's like I'm checking in, and he's about to be checked out. And so I'm talking to my mom. I look over at her, and I look back at him, and she's like, you're not going anywhere. This is exactly where you need to be. And so I stayed. And Richie was fast. I remember I was like counting down the days to get out of there. It seemed like it was like every hour was taking about 4 hours, right? Or 4 weeks. And but whenever, like, I remember them telling me, it's all right, Lance, time to get out of here and move on. I was like, whoa, that was very quick. Y'all sure? Y'all know who you're talking to. So I ended up going to Recovery Residence. And living there, which honestly for me, and it's not AA. Recovery Residence for me, for a guy like me, who every freaking time I go back around other people who are not in these rooms, I have gotten drunk. Like, that's just my story. Like, every single time I went back to the old people, I got drunk. And I'm convinced that I did not plan on drinking on a few of those occasions. It's just, my mind is insane. So end up going through Ridgeview, and my time in there helped on a number of things. Really just helped me get my feet on the ground, honestly. I mean, I don't think it's necessary. If I had just done the work the first time I went to AA, or maybe another time I went to AA, I honestly feel like I'd still be here sober with a lot more time. But I didn't. So, it is what it is. I went through Recovery Residence there, met some of my best friends I've got today, and I'm very, 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 very grateful for that place. Very grateful for that place. They Richard put my feet on the ground. Hope Homes introduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous. It was a requirement to be involved in some type of 12-step program there. I identified as an alcoholic, and that's where I'm at. And I got to working with a sponsor. We sat down, and this was out of that 12-hour window where my head agrees I'm an alcoholic, right? It was way out of that 12-hour window. And we start reading into the book. I had started to relate to people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is like, I had like 4 or 5 months sober before I actually worked the first step. Probably not recommended, but it was. I was sitting in the rooms, and I started to relate to people in AA. I'd be sitting there, and all of a sudden, it's like, oh, yeah, I've done that. I did that, or whatever, right? Started to relate. That's really, for me, where my first step started to work. I started to admit my powerlessness just by relating to somebody. More specifically, relating to, what did you read earlier, the thing, see where you relate to somebody? That's exactly what my sponsor read about a meeting. I was complaining to him about how the speaker was terrible, and he told me that the only reason we're there is, and he went over the facts, see where you relate, see how this program can work for you, right? And so anyways, I went through, and we started working on the first step there. Like I said, I started to relate and hear some. I started to see myself in y'all's stories, and honestly, you guys were so freaking welcoming. I mean, it didn't matter how many times I got drunk. It didn't matter what I did. It didn't matter how many amends I owed, how many amends I didn't owe. Y'all were welcoming. Y'all put your hand out. And that's, for me, from a guy who's, my last emails and stuff I got from my fraternity were a little bit demoralizing. Y'all, it was definitely helpful to get that hand extended to me when I walked in. And so, started working the steps with my sponsor. And that was still, there was a lot of debating that goes on in my head about a lot of stuff. And it still goes on today at times. But there was one line, I remember it still to this day today, that stood out to me. There's a lot in this book that I, especially the first time I read it, did not relate to. There's a lot in here I didn't relate to when I first read it. A lot. Or at least I didn't feel I did, right? But when we got down, I remember my sponsor had me read it out loud. And he sat there and listened. And so I got down and I read, to them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. And I thought back to the fact that I can never see me going to a UGA football game. I can never see myself going to a Braves game. I can never see myself having friends and not being drunk with them. I can never see myself, that's just nevers, a whole bunch of them, sober, right? Like, it didn't make sense to me. You get drunk in Athens, buddy. That's what you do. Like, it's fun most of the time. So, like, that's the way that I related. My alcoholic life seemed the only normal one. When we read that line, we talked about that for a few minutes. I started to relate not only to you guys, but also to the program itself, what alcoholism was, some of my old experiences. I completely didn't think about the fact that whenever I used to bring all the liquor bottles down from the top of my kitchen and try to empty out the drops to make one shot, how that might be a sign of powerlessness, and there might be an allergy. That's not normal behavior. Normal folks don't do that on repeated nights, even though alcohol doesn't reappear in bottles. It didn't connect to me. I didn't understand what powerlessness was until I actually got with a sponsor, worked through that. We talked about what it was. Unmanageability, my ego was way too high to admit that. But when I sat in here and I nodded my head yes, that's whenever my unmanageability started to admit itself. I mean, and those conversations that I had with my sponsor were helpful with that too. He pointed out that my life was unmanageable on a regular basis. And I was able to work the steps. The fourth and fifth step, when I walked in the rooms, like, I was terrified of those. I'm okay. One, two, and three, you can kind of fake, right? At least I felt like you could. 8 and 9, you kind of have to do. 6 and 7, you can kind of fake. 10, 11, 12, you can kind of fake. But those 4 and 5 and 8 and 9 are terrifying to me because that's real life stuff. That's real facing people that I can't do that. Thankfully, step 1 is there for a reason. Step 2 is there for a reason. Step 3 is there for a reason. And for me, they built up to that stuff. And I was able to go through and so many different experiences with different people who helped me along that path, right? Hearing other people talk about the stuff on their fourth step and then seeing their lives change as a result of doing a fifth step. Like, it was something that I had to kind of see. And when I say that, it was amongst my friends. I saw them change. I saw guys work a fifth step, come back, walking like they're like 10 feet tall, right? And like everything's off their shoulders. And I wanted that. I wanted that. That's what alcohol did for me. So went through the steps. I had that experience for me on step 5. That was my boy right there. Honestly, as hard as it was walking in there, it was that much lighter walking out. And I'm very, very, very grateful that I had a sponsor who I was able to go through that with and guide me through that process. 6 and 7, I did not work very well in the revision. I just didn't. Like, I did what was said, but I kind of chalked that up some. 8 and 9, I did. I was still terrified of those. My sponsor honestly kind of just helped me through that process. He didn't exactly hold my hand, but he put out a guide for me to go by, and either I do it or I don't, and it was up to me. And he was just having a clear picture of what to do was helpful. And 10, 11, 12 is for me just what we do on a regular basis. There are times I feel more connected and I feel like I'm more in tune with the steps, and there are times that I don't. It is what it is. That's me. I mean, if other folks don't, that's fine. But for me, I do. For me, there are times that I feel spiritually connected. I'm on my knees in the morning, I'm on my knees at night, and things are good. And there are times where that's a big step for me, is just to be able to get on my knees and get on my knees. And that's tough. I just go through waves, I guess. But what I can say is this, is that the life today that the program has given me is so much better than what I thought I was going to experience when I first walked in the rooms, and is a million times better than what I used to experience. I am most of the time happy, joyous, and free. I really am. Things go bad in life. It is what it is. We go through those things together. Like, there's people in the rooms that I can tell you right now, there's guys I could call, and they'd be there like that, and they live in other states, guaranteed, 100%, and I barely know them, right? And like, that's the beautiful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, is that we do what I cannot. I was freaking hopeless for a long, 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 long time when I was drinking. And there was some time period in AA that I was hopeless as well, but you guys reached out to me on that stuff. If I missed a meeting that I would go to on a regular basis, you guys would call. And stuff like that's extremely helpful for me because I'm the type of guy that will slowly start to step out of the rooms. And I'll try to make it look good while I'm doing it. So nobody asks me about what's really going on. And that's just me. I'm happy today. I enjoy life. There's a retreat that I get to go on every year my second sponsor handed me a form and said, you're going to fill this bad boy out and you're going to go on these dates. I was like, I asked you to sponsor me like 2 weeks ago. I'm going down to up to North Carolina to in the woods and live in a cabin for a weekend with a whole bunch of weird dudes I had never met before, right? Like, that just sounds miserable to me. It's a spiritual retreat for men only. Oh, my God. I mean, it just sounds awful. And so I was scared of him, so I did it. Honestly, the first few months, like, I had gotten him as my sponsor, and the first thing he asked me was, why'd you pick me as your sponsor? And I told him, I said, honestly, man, I'm scared of you. Like, I feel like you can see right through me. And not in, like, a demeaning way, but as, like, I just knew I couldn't BS him, right? And so he brings me up there, and I go up there to this place up in North Carolina, and it's beautiful. It's awesome, right? I meet some folks that I've gotten to develop those friendships with. It's a convention where, I mean, stuff like that, retreats and conventions has been very helpful for me. There's folks that I get to meet there. Jerry, I think, is at every convention, which is awesome. I mean, it's cool. There's folks, I know who I'm going to see at some of the convention. I've gotten to know them after repeatedly seeing them there. Drew's another guy who's there at every one of them. And just get to know folks in Alcoholics Anonymous. More people for me to be able to, when I'm in it, when I've got something going on, I can call on them, or if I got a sponsee or somebody else who's suffering in the program or suffering outside of the program, maybe direct them to those guys. And that's been helpful. So, today, you know, like I said, I'm happy, joyous, and free. My grandmother passed away, who I was able to make amends to, who I used her cancer as an excuse to UGA to give me a health withdrawal without anybody's knowledge. I love my grandma, right? Like, I was able to make amends with her, and I was at her funeral service when she passed away. And some of the stuff that happened there, like, I got other family members who are alcoholics, just cut and dry, right? And I was able to be there with my mom whenever she was going through that. It was a very hard time period for her. And so the program offers a heck of a lot more, right? Like, I didn't think I really cared too much about stuff like that at the time when I first walked in, but, man, that stuff means a lot to me today. And it's just a byproduct of doing the step work. And being around you guys, too. Like I said, I inch off, but thankfully I got folks who will call me and see what's up. And typically they don't do it in a demeaning way either. Typically they're, you know, hey, what's going on with you? And that's helpful. But, I'm just happy today. And that's for a long time. That was not possible for me. It was too much damage inside and outside. And I'm very grateful to be in the rooms and be invited to something where I can participate in recovery. And I'm very, very grateful for that. There's one other thing I like a lot. I'm just going to read it out real quickly. It's in a vision for you. You probably heard it once or twice, but I'm going to say it anyways. Where are we going? Here we go. Boom. Let's go. Yeah. Yes, there is a substitute for me from my old life. There is a substitute, and it's vastly more than that. It's more than a substitute. It is the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. There you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Gone. Life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. Thus we find the fellowship, and so will you. How is that to come about, you ask? Where am I to find these people? You're going to meet these new friends in your own community. Near you, alcoholics are dying helplessly like people in a sinking ship. If you live in a large place, there are hundreds, high and low, rich and poor. These are the future fellows of Alcoholics Anonymous. Among them, you will find lifelong friends. You will be bound to them with new and wonderful ties, for you will escape disaster together, and you will commence shoulder to shoulder your common journey. Then you will know what it means to give of yourself that others may survive and rediscover life. You will learn the full meaning of thy neighbor, love thy neighbor as thyself. And learn that meaning, because honestly, the people in these rooms, so I mean, it's amazing to me how all the politics in the world, everything that goes on out there in the world, there's a common bond in these rooms that we get to experience and walk through together. And I'm very, very grateful for that. I didn't know I was looking for that for a long time. I had no idea that's what I was looking for. And now that I'm able to be here and participating, I'm grateful to have gotten here. And I thank you for letting me come. I hope I'm, thanks, Jerry. Y'all have a good night. Thank you.